the Freedom Fiends, a symposium of unsupervised sounds that caress your Freedom Fiend bone. I'm Randy England, and I have Michael W. Dean and Braden for the first time ever here on the Freedom Fiends. And we have hacked into the government subspace mind control to beam our pirate signal of protest directly to your frontal lobe. So wash the government off your hands and out of your brain. Hello, Michael. Are you there? Woo! I have you. And Braden.
I am here.
Yeah, hey, all right.
Welcome, sir. Welcome, sir.
Braden won the contest. It's, we had this contest, and in the bottom of the Cracker Jack box, he sent in the thing that he got, and he thought he was getting a decoder ring, and he actually got a part-time unpaid job with a high-impact group? What did I say, Braden?
High-demand
group, which is what they call cults. Cults!
Right. Yeah. I feel fortunate.
You are. Oh, that's the new app. I put Angela on here just in time to have her quit the show. So that's a news update.
Allegedly.
Angela quit. And I miss her already.
Not a guarantee. Same here.
I'm kidding. I do miss her. So basically, I fired Jeremy over bad audio. Angela quit over her bad audio. And she said I could tell whatever tale I wanted. And this is the closest to the truth that I know of what really happened. So, I don't know, man. She
allegedly
had a bad microphone. No, here's what happened. So, she had the Fiend's mic. You know, I did all this research for years. I checked out all these different mics. I found three acceptable Freedom Fiends mics. They're all listed actually on the Fiend Phone site. If you go to fiendphone.com and go to the link that says 20 minute audio school, the whole thing is described, and it's like one of three USB dynamic mics, not condenser mics. Angela, shush up, just won't stop. So and then a certain mic stand, and then a certain foam windscreens.
Did you also ask her to have a certain box to put over her head?
No. Okay, I'm getting to the box. And I do have a great picture that I'm going to use probably for the show tonight. Oh, the show tonight is called Wake Up, You Anarchists from Your Surly Slumber, which came to me in a dream today. And I'm going to use this picture of Angela. It's, do you remember Jambe from Pee-wee's Playhouse? It was like a head in a box that spoke.
Vaguely.
Yes. Yeah,
so I didn't watch Pee-wee much, but
my boy JP, our new, so JP and our new fiend Braden are both not on the social networks. I love that, but they listen to the Fiends and they're going to be hosts. He's a host, and you're actually pre-approved. I mean, you're on probation, but you're already on the list. I didn't have to try you out because I spent most of the weekend talking to you on Fiend Phone and teaching you radio. So JP made this thing. I'm going to use it tonight. But so Angela had the perfect mic. She had the great mic. It was set up. It worked when she was drunk. It worked when she was stoned. It worked when she was a foot away or 2 inches away. It worked when she was on the floor. Freedom Fiends was her like time to, she works hard all day at antiwar.com, and then she slaves over a hot military industrial complex blocking, and then does the Fiends, and she gets intoxicated on various things, and she had like the worst mic technique ever. She didn't stay on the mic. She'd go to the side of it, she'd go in front of it, but I found the mic that kind of works if you do that. So she had that, she had it, it worked great, and then she like, I don't know, dropped it in her Kratom coffee and spilled her beer on it or something, I don't know. But ruined it. And she was like, oh, what mic is that? I'll get another one. And I said, it's the Audio Technica 2005. And she goes to Guitar Center on Sunset Boulevard up the street in LA. And, some dude who's like, hey, babe, what's up? What can I sell you? Who works on commission, who has to hustle you, because if he sells you the $999 bass amp instead of the $400 one, he can buy two burritos that week instead of one. So that's how Guitar Center works. So she went up to Guitar Center and said, I need the Audio Technica. I'm doing a podcast. The guy told me to get a... And she'd written it on her hand. She couldn't read it because she was sweating from running up there while high on Kratom. And she's like, yeah, I think it's the Audio Technica 20-something. And the hipster said, oh, the 2020 Audio Technica. Yeah, it's a great podcast mic. It's not. It's got a similar name, same company. It's a condenser mic. It's way too sensitive. So it picks up the truck going by. It picks up her, like, you know, scratching her face when she's counting buttons. It everything, like, picks. It's way too sensitive. You don't use condenser mics for talk radio. You use them for recording a Stradivarius in a very well-conditioned recording studio. You know, you don't use them in an apartment on Sunset Boulevard that's noisy as hell with people, you know, stabbing each other in the next apartment. You need the mics, I suggest. So she got the wrong mic, and then she brought it home, and I said, you should put it, you know, her office where she does the show was kind of noisy. There's, like, computer servers for anti-war running. There's, you know, I don't know, a 24K modem from the 60s dialing things up and fax machines going off and people stabbing each other in the next apartment and, you know, doing things they shouldn't do out on Sunset Boulevard loudly. So I said, well, you can sort of build a little recording studio. I sent her pictures online of, like, basically you get a box. It's like 2 feet by 2 feet by 2 feet. You cut off one side of it, so it's only open on one side, and then you tack up fabric, or you tape fabric, or you stuff a coat in it, or something, to soak up the sound. Then you stick the mic in it, facing out the side that's open, and you talk into that, and it soaks up 80% of the background noise. So I told her to build that. I sent her some pictures of four different ones, ranging from, like, you know, the one that costs nothing to make, to the one that, like, you can buy for $300. So she tries to make one of those, but forgets to put in the sound conditioning. So she's basically, she built something that amplifies background noise. And then she's talking into the back of the mic.
Wow.
So wrong mic, wrong box, wrong side of the mic. And I made fun of her about it. And on Thanksgiving, the day before Thanksgiving, and on Thanksgiving, she sent me a picture of the wonderful meal she was making, the, I don't know, vegan casserole or something. And then, you know, said, I'm going to have to stop doing the show. And I said, yeah, you should, you know, I mean, you know, not you should, but, you know, she said, no hard feelings. And I said, yeah, you know, really, you should concentrate more on antiwar.com, which she said she needed to do. And I was like, yeah, because in the grand scheme of things, that is much more important than the freedom thing. The Kratom Fiends. Yeah. So that's Angela. We miss you already, Angela.
We do.
I do remember that. I remember that episode, and it really sounded like she was, like, talking in a well.
In a box.
In a box, yeah.
She had her D in a box. Her Angela D. Yeah.
Committing hate crimes.
Braden, speak up.
Kennedy. Hey.
Hey, yeah, talk like you're on radio, son. Don't mumble
in
your box. So, Braden, tell us about your journey to liberty and how the Freedom Fiends played an important part in it. I don't know that they did, I'm just assuming.
Oh, my. My journey to liberty.
From the beginning.
Yeah, so...
let me go check the audio. So, yeah, talk, kids. Worms.
Gosh, I've kind of always been anti-authoritarian... But I never really had a name for it or anything. Always been interested in philosophy and new ideas. So I grew up in, like, a Democratic household and voted Democrat a couple times back before I knew better. I had a Constitution phase that lasted about as long as it took me to read through the whole document.
Was that a Tea Party phase?
No, it was just me deciding that, all right, I should read this thing that everyone says is so important. So kind of dove headfirst into that. Yeah, it really was only a few days or a week, and saw plenty of flaws in there. Decided that wasn't the final answer. I was always listening to...
So did you have a time when you had hope that the Constitution... you know, could get us back to where we needed to be or something along those lines?
Yeah, I definitely had that.
Well, what do you think of that right now? And I guess you've reached a point, I'm sure, where you look at it and you go, it's not enough. But how would you feel about going back to the, you know, rolling back all of the usurpations of power that have occurred? Is there any point to doing that, or how do you feel about that?
Well, I got to say, I mean, it might be better in some aspects, but I feel like at some point in the future, we'll just end up in a similar sort of situation. So it wouldn't be like a final answer to that problem.
You didn't happen to read Lysander Spooner to come to that conclusion, did you?
No, I'm probably did. Yeah, what did he say? Like, it either the Constitution got us here, or it was incapable of preventing us from getting us here. So,
yes,
I feel like that would repeat again if we rolled it all the way back.
Yeah, and I agree with you completely. I you know, often have thought, and even now think, that if the federal government was sort of the size and scope that it was in 1890, that I would be far happier, and I'm sure I would be momentarily, because the government, you know, I mean, back in those days, a lot of people, you know, in the 1890s, unless you were distilling whiskey, you might be able to go your whole life and the federal government would never bother you in any way at all.
Yeah.
And that could, you know, that could be good. But, you know, when you look at it, you think, well, you know, it's hopeless, because it would just, it would probably, all of the expansions of the federal government that have occurred in the last 200 years would only happen again, only probably in a tiny fraction of the amount of time it took for the original expansion.
Hate to say it, but I agree with you there.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, you had a constitutional phase and then realized that that wasn't making it. So where'd you go after that?
Well, I'd always been listening to podcasts and reading articles and books and everything throughout all that. So, I don't know, somehow I found the Freedom Fiends, and it actually did play an important part in my sort of journey. I was new to all this, and the Freedom Fiends introduced me to lots of new ideas and concepts.
Well, we are new to you, and we'll pick this up when we come back after the break.
All right.
See you then.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Wow, your cat sounds big.
Yep, she's vicious.
So, real quick, I'm going to give you guys this segment and part of the next one. Let our little birdie Braden fly. Already, it's sink or swim, and you're swimming like a champ, man. But real quick, a couple things is I need money. People send me money. Go to Freedom Fiends and send us money. So, in 2 days, I have this thing due that's the annual $203 or $207 for the streaming feeds. And I've gotten about 50 of it in donations. I don't have the rest of it. And if I don't pay this thing, the apps all stop working, basically, is what it is. Or at least the main button that you like on the apps stops working. So please donate. Give till it hurts. Speaking of which, I'm basically running away right now to go update things on the Bitcoin .bip white paper, the white paper which some are calling a manifesto, more than a white paper, that you could get at free PDF at bipcoin.org. That's Bravo India Papa coin.org. Hey, Randy, I can hear you breathing. Stop breathing. It
Pardon
is a teaching
me.
Hospice for radio. And this is going to be good because Braden's going to be on tomorrow night, too. By the day after that, you're going to be like an old fiend dealing with the clock block. It comes up every few minutes, too. Lou invented that word. I like it. So I showed my white paper to a bunch of people. We're also doing an Indiegogo. We've raised $60 so far out of the $175,000 we're trying to raise. We could do it with a lot less than that, but we could do it right and quick with the full funding. We'd like to get it. And if nothing else, asking for that amount actually like will make people go, whoa, what are these people thinking? And make them check it out. Because it's important to me to get this idea out there that we need to finally do distributed DNS, because Namecoin sure didn't get it right. Everyone's like, hey, we don't need your white paper. We don't need .bip. There's Namecoin. And I'm like, yeah, but no one can use Namecoin. It's unusable. Technically, it works, but no one uses it because so many problems that we're going to solve. So if you want to read how we're going to solve them, go read the white paper. But I had Kevin McKernan read this. Kevin McKernan, the DNA scientist, fiend fan, who we brought him from libertarian to full-on anarchist years ago. And he's like an actual DNA scientist. He's not like some guy who reads. He runs companies that have employees and are located in the Bahamas because the laws are more, you know, there's less U.S. government regulation to doing experimentation, like, you know,
on humans,
sequencing the marijuana genome, which he did first, and sequencing the kratom genome, which he's going to work on. Just because you heard the Freedom Fiends talk to me about kratom nonstop. You thought kratom was imaginary, right, Braden?
Yeah, I thought that was some crazy thing that your dreams had invented.
Yeah, you and Ben Stone. That's funny. Yeah, a lot of people thought that. My friend Little Mike thought it was a district in The Hobbit.
So it's like it. Michael, is the white paper now been changed or is it being changed?
Oh, it's changed every few hours. Oh. So, you know, it says what update number fraction is.
I was going to read that between like 10:30 and 11:30 tonight before the show because I wanted to ask you some
tomorrow.
Stuff.
Download it tomorrow.
I was going to watch it, but then I had to stay up late and watch the Chiefs spank the Broncos, and I missed
delete
that.
Delete it. Download it tomorrow. You'll have a better
delete it again. So, okay.
Little tiny changes, like one thing. Kevin McKernan funds businesses, runs businesses, you know, signs paychecks for 40 people, creates jobs, has been honored at the White House, which sounds square as hell, but it's like, hey, do you know anybody else who's been honored at the White House for his work on the Human Genome Project back in the day under, was it Carter? I don't know. Clinton? One of those goofuses. So Kevin had a great suggestion. He had a bunch of little typo correction stuff, but he loves the idea, and he had the best suggestion ever. This is going to be like the, you know, when you watch the Facebook movie, and they're like, the guy who invented Napster's like, oh, and one more thing, drop the, not the Facebook, just Facebook. Kevin gave me that suggestion tonight. He said, basically, don't give 50% of the Bitcoin that comes into charity and 50% to the developers. Give 80% to the developers and 20% to charities. That's still very generous, and it could mean the difference down the line of making or breaking and having this thing keep going or dying. That's brilliant, and I'm going to write that in.
Heck yeah.
Thank you, Kevin. Yeah, man, because I don't want to be cyber-begging like Namecoin. I cyber-beg for the Freedom Fiends, but that's a nonprofit hobby venture. You know, this is Bitcoin. Blockchains are money, you know. You don't want to be cyber begging to keep your money network going, or there's something like money. For legal purposes, I'm going to say they're not money. They are mediums of exchange. Right, attorney?
Yeah.
Randy's an attorney. Do you know that, Braden? And you're an architect. Man,
I did.
I'm the bum on this show. Okay, you guys get the next segment.
The next segment. Hey, I'm going to run to the run to the can. I'll be right back.
The Freedom Fiends now have a free app for your Android phone, tablet, phablet, or other chromed robot turd available now from the Google Play Store, Amazon, and FreedomFiends.com. Lovingly handcrafted by head hamster Michael W. Dean, the artisanal Freedom Fiends radio app allows you to listen live, keep up with the podcast, chat directly with other fiends, get discounts on bigger buttons, brainwash yourself with a 24/7 random episode, and so much more. You know the Freedom Fiends is the best libertarian radio show in the world, but when the fiends aren't live, you can use the app to listen to LRN.FM from anywhere. The Freedom Fiends radio app is like having a virtual libertarian re-education camp in your pocket. It's your gateway to the exclusive high-demand group that is the Freedom Fiends. Install the Freedom Fiends radio Android app today. It's free, and of course, it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license. Tell two friends. Review it on Google Play and Amazon. Prepare for the inevitable death of terrestrial radio, and get ready for LibPair with the Freedom Fiends radio app for Android. Worms.
we're back. Back with the Freedom Fiends. And this is Randy England. And Braden is here.
Hello.
And furries, this is the Freedom Fiends Unnecessary Reeducation Exigency Something Something Service System. Hey, I said I wasn't coming on in this segment, but I just thought of something, too, along the lines of, like, Kevin's contribution to this. Really, really important, you know, and not just along the lines of you know, Facebook and the guy from Napster saying, not the Facebook, just Facebook. Here's a story. This is true. So Alcoholics Anonymous, love them or hate them, whatever you think about them, they are very interesting, have a very interesting history from an organizational standpoint. And one of the things is very early on in like 1935, they started it. And in like, I don't know, 37 or 38, when they were getting a little beyond like just a couple of meetings in people's living rooms and were, you know, how are we going to keep this going? And they actually sobered up some attorneys to do this, like targeted them and sobered them up. And they actually targeted and sobered up like a newspaper editor, a guy who used to run a newspaper who was like living in the gutter. They were like, we need him to edit our big book. So they sobered him up. I mean, they were on a mission. But one thing they did was they had a dinner put on for them by, I think it was the Rockefellers, who was some, you know, part of the Borg that runs the world kind of people that were richer than God. And those people made a, like, you know, one-time donation of like $5,000, which was, you know, like $200,000 back then, but now. But, you know, somebody, they gave a donation, and they gave a dinner and invited a lot of people from magazines and the press and, you know, people of standing in the community, which actually got them the first press in Collier's Magazine, you know, about, which was the beginning of them spreading nationwide. And Bill Wilson, the co-founder of AA, who had been a stockbroker, the other co-founder was a butt doctor. What's that called?
I think you got it right.
I think it's called a butt
proctologist.
Doctor.
Yeah, butt, yeah. Buttologist.
Right.
So my joke is, you know, a proctologist and a stockbroker walk into a bar and they don't drink. That's the AA joke I wrote. It's only funny if you've been in AA. So, you know, and like, I've hung out with members of Jane's Addiction and snorted crystal meth and heroin off of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I'm not going to go there. So anyway, AA, back in the day, they asked Rockefeller or Ford or one of those people, you know, who generously gave them $5,000, like, hey, how about if you gave us like $20,000 a year? That'd be a drop in the bucket for you. We could get you a tax write-off, you know, and like, we're trying to hustle him for that. And like, he was like, no, the biggest favor I can do for you is to not fund you with a lot of money. Just give you a little seed money, some advice, some exposure, and let you go, because otherwise you'll be beholden to me. And that's like the kind of advice Kevin just gave me. You know, we're already not beholden to anybody. We're not going to take investments. We're not going to incorporate. We're not going to be a corporate blockchain like, you know, four of the top 10 cryptocurrencies, because those have points of failure. You know, those can be censored. They can be shut down. They can be ceased and desisted. And really, like, a corporation, it's illegal for the members of the board of a corporation to make decisions that don't make as much money as possible for the corporation. Like, you know, if the government and a private organization are bidding on a contractor, the corporate board members could go to jail if they screw their stockholders by, you know, taking the moral high road and not taking the government contract that pays more. So we don't want to be beholden to anybody. But the thing that the Kevin McKernan said is just mind-blowing to me, like 80-20, not 50-50. You know, I really don't want to be cyber-begging for the thing that's running the internet in 5 years. And that happens, too. Like, the guys who run, I don't know if it was SSL certs or something, there was like something that runs something on the internet that's very important that everyone uses every day and doesn't think about, but like, without it, the internet falls apart. It was basically maintained by one guy who like was physically ill and like couldn't afford to even pay his rent. And they did an article about him in, you know, Wired magazine, and he got enough donation to keep it going. But it's like, Yeah, I don't want this to be a point of failure on us not having money. So thank you, Kevin McKernan, for your service. And all right, guys, have fun later. Bye.
Hey, Michael.
Cool. Thanks, Michael.
Yeah, Braden.
Yeah, hey there.
Before we came back this hour, you were speaking of your journey to anarchism. I think we just finished talking about the Constitution, and while you had a short stint as a constitutionalist somewhere along the spectrum of if we could only get back to that, things would be so much better. But then after a while, that didn't really hold up for you, and you moved on to thinking maybe no state at all. Is that right? Or where did you go from there?
Yeah, that's pretty close to accurate. I still had a few hangups, like, you know, who would build the roads. That one took me a little bit to figure out. And well,
what'd you do to figure that out? Just reading different people?
Yeah, you know, you can hop online and Google or search for who will build the roads, and you get all kind of fun articles answering that question.
Well, is there any particular writers or speakers or podcasters, yeah, I don't know, that address the issues that were hard for you, or how can this possibly happen if they don't have a government to make it happen?
For sure. There were so many influences. Like I said, the Freedom Fiends, Tom Woods' show gets into some kind of nitty-gritty details sometimes, so that helped out. I read a lot, like Lysander Spooner. Larkin Rose was an influence at the beginning. So just people like that, names you've heard before.
Any writers like, oh, I don't know, Murray Rothbard or Walter Block or?
Yep, I got into
any of those.
I got into Rothbard a little bit later. I may have read something short by him at the beginning, but just all kind of different people guiding me along the straight and narrow path here.
Now, as you were coming into this, though, you know, I think you said early on, even before you know, you stopped being a constitutionalist, or at least maybe even before you even got to that point on the trip, you were sort of anti-authoritarian by nature.
That's right? Definitely true. Yep.
And because you know, I hear that an awful lot in libertarian anarchist circles, and. For me, it wasn't that way. It took me quite a long time, and it probably wasn't. It probably was. Maybe it was because I didn't chafe so much against, you know, whatever.
Yeah, things definitely chafed me. Like, I remember being 10 years old, and my parents explaining that when I got a job, someone would be taking a certain amount of my paycheck every month and saving my money for me, and it's called Social Security, and that really upset me. Like, there's just lots of little things like that that this sort of system just never sit right with me.
That's interesting. When I was a kid, I mean when I say a kid, I'm thinking like 9 or 10 years old, I got some weird thing in my head. I must have been watching some gangster movies or something. Had this weird idea in my head that somehow all adults were paying tribute to the mob. I must have seen some movies or something. And this was before The Godfather, so it wasn't, you know, from that. But had the idea that they would show up, you know, at the places of business and collect their bit of graft, you know, protection money or everything. And I, you know, when I was a kid, I mean, I mowed grass and you know, I was a paper boy and stuff like that. Was back when kids carried the papers and threw them up on every lawn. Yep. A long time ago. But anyway, I kept thinking that sooner or later, you know, I was going to hear about this, or sooner or later my dad would sit down with me and say, Randy, I need to tell you about, you know, I need to tell you about the mob, you know, and what you have to pay. You know, I had this weird idea that this was true. And, you know, finally, you know, I mean, I grew up, and when I was 16, I got a, you know, better job and that sort of thing. And graduated from college, got a job, and the mob never showed up. And then later I realized that the mob did show up.
And
my fear exactly came to fruition. And even with exactly the same threats of violence, if I didn't cough up the dough.
Yep.
And so the stupid child nightmare turned out to be true.
Well, that's pretty unfortunate, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But one thing I was going to ask you, though, was But that was a personal thing, you know, for you, that you didn't like people telling you what to do. Now, I assume that if you're able to subordinate that urge to do whatever you want when, you know, you either work for someone else, either temporarily, or you've accepted a job, and that's not a problem, right?
Yeah, there's a big difference between, you know, chosen obligations and obligations that are forced onto you.
Right, right. Even though sometimes we feel a little bit forced in, you know, in some job.
Sometimes.
But also, there are, you know, you've probably read, you know, there's a couple schools of libertarianism or stateless. Libertarian anarchy is really probably the best definition, just so you don't get the idea that the anarchy that we're talking about is the kind that's rather socialist and property stealing type of anarchy. But a libertarian anarchy is like no government and, you know, no coercion of people. And that's, you know, basically what most of the people in this movement are they're some degree, you know, headed in that direction, even if they're not all the way there. But you have people on one side that feel like there's a moral component there, that it's simply wrong to compel people against their world. It's what we might call it's evil to use other people for your purposes and make them do what you want if they don't want to, if they're not hurting anybody. And that's a moral standpoint or a natural law of view. I think Murray Rothbard would come from that direction. But then you have other people from the other side is, I think the word they use is consequentialist, and it's like, let's get rid of the state because, hey, it would work so much better, and we would be so much more prosperous, and so everything would be better if we were free. And, of course, they make really good arguments. I mean, you have a guy like David Friedman in his book, and I think the new version of it just came out in the last year, called The Machinery of Freedom, I think.
Yeah.
And it's filled with good examples of why everyone would be happier and better off in a free world without a government.
Sounds good to me.
You know, that's kind of the other, you know, the other foot next to the natural law one.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgoristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agorist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, go with AgoristHosting.com.
Freedom Fiends.
Freedom Fiends are back. We're back from the market. And we're here with Braden, and this is Randy England. And Michael W. Dean is, he's still away, writing the white paper on, is it Bitcoin?
Bitcoin.
Or Bitcoin. Or dot
the something. Dot BIP.
Help me with dot BIP. That's right.
Dot BIP. That's right.
Which I don't understand completely yet, but it sounds really, really cool. And it sounds important.
Let me take a stab at it, Randy.
Do it.
Because this flows into my whole tale I've been weaving all night. So I've been talking about, you know, exploring new ideas and crazy things that maybe some people wouldn't want you to read or hear about. So Michael's project, the .bip, would be a way to avoid censorship. So in the future, if somebody like me was trying to explore these same ideas, they could use the .bip system to make sure they're going to have access to all the information.
Okay, now tell me, I have a website. My website is free is beautiful. freeisbeautiful.net. And say the government decides they do not like what's on freeisbeautiful.net. And I don't think they do. But
okay.
So they finally get up the guts that they're going to shut me down. How does this help me?
So in that case, what somebody like me would do is go to freeisbeautiful.bip, and in that way, I would still get to your website no matter what any government or anyone else has to say about it.
You know, how would it, what is it going to reference my my IP address so that you can yep. go straight to it? It takes the place of the domain name.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of technical wizardry that is going to go on in the background, and Michael seems to have all that sorted out. But yeah, basically it will tie the name to the IP address. So it will work even if somebody is trying to censor you.
Now, aren't there a lot of different name servers on the internet? It's not just one central place, isn't it?
Yep, you're correct. There are multiple name servers, but they all coordinate with each other and have the same information. So Michael's system would be a decentralized way to do that. So it would be a bunch of people running it on their home computers.
So if they had, if the government sent a takedown notice to each one of those several domain name server companies, whatever, I presume that they would have to obey those court orders. Whereas, am I getting it right that the .bip system, there's no one that they could serve such a court order on?
That's true.
Yep, that's absolutely right.
I mean, our goal is basically, you like how I just seamlessly like caught up? And
that was great.
Furry. I just joined the stream. I joined the blockchain at a different block.
Well, so, you're on tonight, Michael, so you just, you know, don't have to do that.
Yeah.
You're not furry tonight.
I'm not furry.
You're tonight. A regular guy.
Furry. Welcome to Furry Tonight. That should be my other radio show. My cable TV, access cable TV show. So, yeah, I did an interview tonight and we addressed that. It was on The Crypto Show. It's up now, but I actually recorded it on my end. It was over Skype with Derek and I and 9 other people on their end. And I made the audio on my end is a lot better, of course. So I'm going to put that up probably for the day we don't have a show, Friday. I'll release it on the podcast then. But they asked me about that, and I basically said, hey, same thing that I said with Nima at the end of Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom. You know, if anybody on the Bipcoin team is ever found dead of a drug overdose, a car crash, or an apparent suicide, there was a government agency behind it. And that is, I stole that from Jello Biafra. He said that about the Dead Kennedys, his band. And it was brilliant. And he said it in like some tiny little fanzine no one remembers, and no one remembers him saying it because no one died. It was ironic though,
because he didn't die, right?
No, because their drummer at the time was a heroin addict and a speed freak, so he could have died, but I don't think Jello knew that. I think he was too busy yelling at Ronald Reagan, as he should have been, to that guy taught me to hate government, but now, you know, he
learned
Bernie
why.
Sanders. He wants Bernie Sanders. He just hates the right. He's a half measure. All right, we'll be back with more in hour 2 of the Freedom Fiends.
Ross Ulbricht was sentenced to life in prison for operating the Silk Road. But that's not the end of the story. Ross is trying to get out, but he needs your help. The Free Rossathon is happening Sunday, December 4th from 2 to 10 p.m. Eastern, featuring Roger Ver, Cody Wilson, Doug Casey, Tom Woods, and dozens of equally seditious speakers. Go to freeross.org right now and register for this free event. It's a fundraiser for Ross's appeal, so prepare to be inspired. freeross.org. That's freeross.org.
We're back.
Trigger warning. This is the Freedom Fiends. broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. Please insert the purple wire in your cortex now. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. This is Braden, and I'm here with Randy England.
Hi, Braden.
Hello, hello.
Hey, and I think the BIPCOT license, I don't follow as closely as I should, but hasn't it recently been amended to allow, what, Postman or something to use?
Yeah, I believe there's a libertarian indulgence option on there. So if you're the sort of government worker who is nonviolent and providing services, you can ask for an exemption.
Oh, well, you know, I was once a, well, that wouldn't work. I was once a prosecutor, and I don't think that I would be, or I should be, you know, eligible for that if I was still one.
Gotcha.
Simply because, you know, the cops are, I didn't carry a gun, but the cops were there to do, you know, what we were making them do. So I think there would have to be, the exemption would have to be only extended to people that weren't going to coerce you, I would think.
Yeah, I believe that's correct. People who don't carry the guns or order the guns around.
Yeah, something like that. And it may be a limited exemption, too. But I have to read it over again. It's been a week since I saw that go by. Hey, you know, before we, at the end of the last hour, and I think Michael was talking about the .bip at the very end. But just ahead of that, we were talking about your trip into libertarian anarchy. And I think I had the last thing I was probably talking. I talked too much, but the difference between the idea that coercing others is wrong, as opposed to the idea that coercing others doesn't work out as well. And that's doesn't work out as well as the consequentialist reason for liberty, because if you have a free society, it'll be a happier society, a more prosperous society, more peaceful, more everything good. And the other side is, well, it's nice that society would be better if it was free, but in fact it really doesn't matter, because coercing other people in and of itself is wrong.
Yep.
I don't know if we got to the point of, if you were talking about maybe where you came down in that spectrum,
yeah,
or not.
Yeah, absolutely. I came down firmly on the moral side of that argument, and I kind of came to realize it's unethical to use the violence of the state to impose your preferences on other people. And that's true for me, and that's true for anyone else. So my arguments are definitely ethical and not practical.
You know, and the arguments related to that, they really come to mind to me whenever we have an election. And of course, we just had one. And when I
is that what that was?
Around,
okay.
Yeah, and I get around, you know, talking with my friends, and I say, look, here's the way I feel. You know, if I was to go to the polls, I can't go in there and vote for someone who is going to, say, the local sheriff's race. I can't go in there and vote for somebody who's going to do something that's evil, that's wrong.
Absolutely.
I can't go vote for somebody who's going to go throw you in a cage because you use, you know, a drug that they say you're not allowed to use. And I can't vote for you if you're going to go vote in the legislature to make that particular activity or any other activity that isn't hurting anyone, except maybe yourself, which is none of their business. I can't vote for them. So every time you go in there and cast a vote for either some some issue that is going to coerce others, or a person that is going to coerce others. You know, if you're voting for the proxy guy who's going to go in and break down your neighbor's door, even though you would never dream of doing that yourself, I just have to stop and say, I can't do that. You know, it's one thing. I wasn't going to go at all to vote, and I got a... looked at a copy of the ballot, and there on the back of the ballot is an amendment in my state that said if you enact this amendment, they can never ever again increase the sales taxes. There can be no new sales taxes in the state ever. And I'm thinking, oh gee, they put something on the ballot that says you can't raise the tax. And I'm all for restrictions on taxes, either repealing them or stopping them. And you know, like I liked that one. And sure. I think we had one guy on the ballot. I didn't want to vote for anybody, but there was one guy, a judge who was just on the ballot. Shall this person, you know, remain in this position of coercing you, you know, of bossing you? Shall this person continue to boss you around, yes or no? And you're going, well, I think I could probably, my conscience would allow me to vote no. But most of the time, I just can't get into that. I couldn't vote for anybody this time around. It was so horrible. Yep. I don't know if I could ever vote for anyone again.
Same here.
Yeah. So you come down on the... you know, on the it's wrong side. Now, the consequentialist, and I'm not sure if the idea that if we were free, we would have, say we didn't have, you know, the big federal government and everything, you know, what would it cost us? How much effort would it be to protect us from other countries or something,
right,
you know, from attacking us? And I'm thinking, well, I don't know how much it would cost us to do what we're doing now, but I think I'm pretty sure that it would cost a tiny fraction of what we're spending now if there wasn't one boot on the ground in anybody else's country, and the only dime that was ever spent on defending the geographical region, that is the United States, was, you know, were people who actually were here.
Right.
Know, you would defend nothing but a defined area that you know, people had agreed to defend, perhaps through some sort of, you know, voluntary associations in that. And the thing that would really make it tiny is that if we weren't tramping around over the whole world and killing people everywhere, I'm not sure that most of the people that we're afraid of would even care about us or have the slightest interest in harming anyone here.
Yeah, it's an interesting question.
Yeah, so I'm thinking that's a consequentialist issue, that actually it would be much cheaper to protect ourselves. And I also kind of feel like not killing a bunch of other people is probably a plus.
I would agree, yep.
You know, so you're looking at, okay, it's the right thing to do not to coerce all these people, not to coerce the people, not to coerce your neighbors into paying for all of this, you know, military.
Yep.
It's right, and it's also better. So what's not to like?
Exactly.
And of course, you know, the world is filled with... What do you call them? I'll call them busybodies.
Okay. You know,
people who think that they run everybody else's life. There was my wife had a she came in from lunch, and her office is right across from the polling place on election day, and there were two driveways, and one said exit only. And one of the secretaries came in, and she was ranting because someone had gone in the exit marked one. And wasn't that horrible? That would be done on election day. It was like blaspheming the flag and apple pie.
On the holiest of holy days.
Yeah. The date of the civil sacrament of voting. And, you know, this is... The impulse to be a busybody, you know, that may be, you know, you were saying that your initial entree into liberty was, kicking back against authority. And I don't know, maybe my entree into it is not having a desire to boss other people around.
Sure.
I started out, I spent 13 years in the restaurant business right out of college. And I did that, and, the only way that you can ever make enough money even to live on in that business is if you become a manager and, move up a bit, which means you have to be in a position where you're bossing people around all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, bossing people around isn't all that it's cracked up to be, because everybody you may boss a bunch of people around, but you got a boss too, and every time one of those people that you boss around screws up anything, man, it's on you.
Yep.
And I mean, I got so sick of that, I really wanted to get out and find some kind of job where I could live on my own work and not be in charge of anybody else, telling anybody else what to do.
For sure.
Yeah, and I ended up going to law school, and I've avoided, as much as I can, that situation. And actually, yeah. I've never been anyone's boss since I got out in 1990. So,
that's a really noble instinct.
Well, no, a lot of people would say that it's just weak. You're not suited for doing that. I don't know if I was suited. I think when I was in the restaurant business and had a lot of employees, I did fine, but I just don't like it. And it's just, if you're cut out for it, I mean, maybe it's better, but I didn't like it, and I wanted out of it, and I got out and I stayed out, and I won't even when I got into private practice, I don't have any employees. I'm a solo practitioner.
Right.
I do criminal defense only, and I don't don't boss anybody around. It works out well. And so but that, those are different ways that you can kind of come into this thing, whether it's, kicking back against the boss or not wanting to be the boss. I suppose some other people would have different stories to tell.
Yep.
On that sort of thing. I don't know.
There's many different paths to end up at the same location. So they each have their merits.
Well, I think we're going to the market.
All right.
This is the Freedom Fiends. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at GetCell411.com. That's GetCell411.com.
Freedom Fiends.
Freedom Fiends.
We're back from the market, and this is Randy England. I'm with Braden, and we're talking about libertarian anarchy. And we were talking during the break, about sometimes it's a little egg-headed sort of thing, but talking about when a libertarian should or shouldn't use force. We talk about the non-aggression principle, and which everyone defines as the idea that no one should initiate force against another person. And just the mere words, initiating force, means we're only talking about aggression. We're not talking about self-defense. And you had some question along those lines, Braden, I think. And
yeah.
Then we came back and perhaps you could finish the thought.
Yeah. So You know, I wonder about all these things, the non-aggression principle and self-defense and what would be proper and moral. So say you witness a crime being committed, maybe like a robbery or something, and you're 100% certain that it's an actual robbery, that you're not mistaken. So in that scenario, is it okay to maybe use some physical force to stop that robber?
What do you think?
Yeah, it's a tough call, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. You say, okay, would the person who's being robbed or attacked, would they have the right to defend themselves against the aggressor?
Yes. Now, okay. There, I think that's a little easier. I would say, yeah, for sure.
Okay. Well, all right. If they had the right to defend themselves, would they have the right to delegate to another person the right to defend them? Say you're some Hollywood actor who has a couple of big burly bodyguards who go around. They're paid to protect you from people who might harm you. Do you have the right to delegate to someone a right that you definitely possess?
Sure, I would say you could definitely delegate that in advance.
Okay, but in your situation, you're just talking about some man on the street sort of situation. You come to a situation where you see a clear situation of someone being aggressed against. You also have some reason to think that you can actually help.
Right.
But you may have to commit aggression against this attacker. Not aggression, but may have to use force against this attacker. Yeah, I don't know. I would come down on the side of, if you're sure of what you're doing, then you absolutely would have the right to. And there would be no repercussions as long as you were right. The scary thing is knowing if the situation is right or not.
Yep, that is the hard part.
Yeah, because you don't know when you come in. One time, some friends of mine and I were victims of an armed robbery. Really hairy. We had there was a big shootout. It was amazing, but nobody got killed. But the thing that I was so struck by is that when it was over, one of my friends was shot on the floor, and we're calling for help, called the police and all of this, and we got the place secured and we're trying to help him and got the doors locked and everything, and we knew exactly who belonged in the building and who didn't. And so once everything was locked and we were waiting, it was there was no tension there in terms of fear, in the sense of, gee, could somebody here hurt somebody else or anything? But that changed immediately the moment the police got there. We opened the door, and all of a sudden the cops come in, and they're all just freaked out, wide-eyed, looking at every single person like they're, they got a gun.
Dangerous, yeah.
Yeah, now I understand it completely. They're sizing up a situation that we fully understood. But I was thinking, that was a dangerous moment, and the cops were recognizing that it was a dangerous moment for them, because they didn't know who was a good guy and who wasn't.
Right.
And it took a couple minutes to make it clear that the guy was gone and everybody here was a good guy. You don't know the situation that you're in, and that's probably the hardest questions. And the easy one about if you're walking down the street and somebody comes up, sticks a gun in your face to rob you, is that what you do is one question, but at least you'd know the situation and you'd have the right to defend yourself if you wanted to.
Absolutely.
Yep. Well, I think we're at the break again. That was fast.
That was.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you sick of seeing peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, What are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
The Freedom Fiends. Freedom Fiends is back. We're back.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think Michael W. Dean may even be here with us.
I am. I'm here to answer your questions.
Hello,
and
Michael.
You hear me? Can you hear me now?
We can hear you.
Right. We have queries, Michael.
Loud and clear.
Queries, no homo. Give me your questions about Bitcoin. I'm ready to answer them all.
Okay. Well, I have a question. Let me get to it here.
Yes, you and the distinguished-looking gentleman. Yes?
I wasn't ready for that. But we were talking about this before we came back, and I'm mining Bitcoin.
Good.
Which is kind of fun. Once you figure it out, I know when Bitcoin was early, in the days when it was 50 cents for a whole Bitcoin, I actually tried mining that, but I didn't pool and I never got anything. So that was dumb. And then I lost the bit nickel that I had.
Is that 5 Bitcoin or?
No, it's 0.05.
Satoshis.
0.05 bitcoins, you know, which would be $50 if it was $1,000 for a whole Bitcoin. Well, anyway, I lost my Bitcoin, and then it went up to $1,000, and so, you know, that ended that. But then in August, when Bitcoin came out, I thought, oh, I'm now at the ground floor. So I started mining, but still, stupidly, I didn't get this. I started mining by myself. And did that for a
couple weeks, but you know,
yeah, I got nothing, just zip, nothing, you know. And I stopped, and then a few days later, the program shut down. Yeah,
shut down everything.
Well, it came back up this last time. What, at the end of October?
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I'll look at this a little closer, and I finally figured out this thing about mining in a pool. And that a person who mines by themselves, unless they have some supercomputer or something, almost can't hope to get anything.
Yeah,
because they can't,
like, you know, every other day you get, you know, 8 maybe you know,
and maybe not. Yeah. Maybe not. So anyway, but the pool thing is that you go in and you combine together with like 20 other miners,
or 2
or 5 other, or however many. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
software. Mining software came pretty quickly after Bitcoin existed, and it's been adopted for other cryptocurrencies. It's a brilliant idea because it allows you, and it's actually something that was predicted like 20 years ago, before any of this existed. Like somebody said, like, with strong encryption, at some point there will be able to be companies or businesses where people who don't even know each other and might even hate each other could collaborate and make money together without any commitment, any contract, without knowing their names. I mean, you go on a mining pool, you know, you configure the software, and you go on the pool and you use your computer to mine, and from time to time you get payouts in the cryptocurrency, and it's kind of like a worker-owned business without the communism and without the union meeting rhetoric, you know?
Yeah, I just pulled up the Bitcoin, one of the Bitcoin pools.
No commitment, though, either. You know, you can do it for an hour or forever.
The thing that's cool about it, it tells you, first of all, how much raw computing is going on in the entire network. Now, is that for all Bitcoin mining?
Yeah. What does it say? It's
it says 16 kilohertz per second. Yeah, per second. And then over to the right of that, it has our pool, our little group, right? And it had a hash rate of 13.9 kilohash per second, which means most of that network is coming off of this one pool.
Well, there's also another pool that's reliable, There was a third pool that's not reliable that was like forking. There have been a couple of those, but basically any pools that are good that come up, we're going to test and check out and probably sit, watch them for a week and try them for a few days. And then and only then will they be recommended on the mining link on bitcoin.org. So I wouldn't use any pools that aren't approved.
Does a pool need to get to a certain size before it's going to bring you in a good share of your coins?
Yeah. I mean, there was another pool that like was working that wasn't forking, but had like, you know, one guy on it, the guy running the pool, and he didn't have much hashing power. So, you know, that's of no help. So really it's like, it needs to be a chunk of the mining power. You know, I wouldn't say 51%. I mean, that's actually a thing of like, if somebody gets more than 51%, they can fork the pool in another direction, but they kind of can't too. I mean, that's a theory with Bitcoin, and it's like, but it's not a threat with Bitcoin, especially now, because, you know, if that happened, we would just declare, since it's kind of, there is a little centralization still at this point. It hasn't left our little grubby hands yet. You know, it needs to stay in the nest for a little while longer until it can fly on its own, kind of like Braden. But it's, you know, if somebody forked our pool, if somebody has forked our pool before, not even by having 51%, by having misconfigured software. And, you know, we just said, that's not the right pool. We're the right pool. And the smart people stayed with us. So
how would, but the pool, there's 22 connected miners to this, right? This pool right now.
And then there's like four on the other one. And then
I assume they don't know
solo miners.
They don't know each other. I mean, how could they do something nefarious? They don't know each other. You don't know who they are.
Well, if somebody who had, you know, like some Chinese mining corporation that's, you know, there is kind of centralization with Bitcoin. I mean, there are mining pool consortiums. I mean, there's basically like two dozen people that control the fate of Bitcoin. Seriously. This is not something a lot of people want to consider or would believe, but it's like, you know, there's about a dozen people who do most of the programming. And then whether or not that becomes consensus depends on whether it's adopted by the majority of the mining power. And really, that is literally controlled by like, you know, 10 or 12 companies right now. And a lot of them are like kind of controlled by the Chinese government, which is weird. So if one of those, like, you know, applied giga hashes of mining power to Bitcoin for even, you know, an hour, I mean, it would fork the pool. It would go off in their direction. But it never really kills our coin, because what we're mining is the consensus, because we say it is, and the smart miners would stay with us and not go off on that other one. And, you know, there's also a theory with Bitcoin and any cryptocurrency that, like, you know, somebody could take their mining power and have more than 51% of the network and do something nefarious, like make a transaction that doesn't exist. But then it would be like rejected with the next block. And really, they'd make a lot more money by just mining the coin. So it's really brilliant the way Satoshi figured this all out on his own to have. And there's some theories that he was a consortium of people under. It's definitely a pseudonym. But, you know, it's pretty brilliant how everything works. Although Bitcoin has been having some growing pains that Bitcoin does not have and won't have for a long time.
Aren't there some weaknesses that Bitcoin has that Bitcoin does not have?
Yeah, it's a block size thing that's slowing down transactions. I actually had a transaction in Bitcoin take 2 days the other day. It wasn't huge. It didn't, like, ruin my life. It was $16. But it was it was kind of mind-blowing to me because, you know, usually like people say, well, that happens if you don't give enough of a transaction fee. But, you know, I'm using the like default transaction fee in Multibit, which is one of the main wallets. So like doing it the way you're supposed to do it took me 2 days to get a transaction through. I mean, it showed as incoming in, you know, minutes. But it took 2 days to be spendable. That's insane. And they're trying to deal with that with something called segregated witness, which is also another thing, which some are saying is a power grab to get these certain mining pool, huge mining pool groups of Bitcoin to have more control. And they kind of did it as a Trojan horse in this, oh, we'll fix the block size a little bit. We'll make it a little bigger, but not as big as a lot of people want to make it. And other, like Roger Ver, the guy who, Bitcoin Jesus, who has $50 million because he started mining Bitcoin when it was easy to do on home computers, and he ran a used computer store. So he mined an inordinate amount of it before it was worth anything, and he sat on it. He's actually trying to get people to like mine on this other pool that's doing this other thing, and he's actually gone off and created another coin. And so there's a lot of like, no, do it my way, no, do it my way going on, and Bitcoin doesn't have any of that yet. And, you know, hopefully never will, because we can learn from the problems of Bitcoin. And in a way, we have already, because we're using a code base called CryptoNote, which solves some of the problems of Bitcoin.
What about anonymity? Isn't that supposed to be a lot better?
Yeah, like you cannot tell by looking at the blockchain who made what transaction, because it creates a new address for every transaction.
Would Ross Ulbricht be in jail today if he had worked with Bitcoin? No,
he would be. He's a hero, and he's famous because he's in prison for trying to make freedom. But I think he'd much prefer to be an anonymous nobody who's not in prison. And he would probably be an anonymous nobody if this kind of, if Bitcoin had had this, or if, you know, if any CryptoNote coins got adoption for anything other than, you know, the thing is, like, there's a lot of coins that are traded, a lot of altcoins. There's about 1,000 altcoins, maybe a few more. There's about 640 that, like, you can actually go trade right now on crypto, on, you know, various exchanges. But really, very few of them are used for anything other than speculation, except for Bitcoin. Like, Bitcoin is a huge ecosystem of commerce. I mean, big. Like, the Bitcoin transactions per day are more money than, you know, the transactions of entire small nations.
Couldn't you see, though, people starting up some dark web Silk Road type sites who are saying, we're no longer going to take the risk of taking Bitcoins, go get yourself some Bitcoin, or at least some CryptoNote coin, and come and buy it here.
Bitcoin, that's none of my business. We are not making this for the dark web. You know,
I know, but the anonymity would cause it to happen.
There's another anonymous coin based on the same code base called Monero that's been around for 2 years that's actually adopted and you can be used on one of the big dark webs, but people are not using it for that.
Huh.
Bitcoin is still king, but Bitcoin is going to be used for something other than that. So more when we come back.
Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Hi, have you heard about Bipcoin? Not Bitcoin, but Bipcoin. Bravo, India, Papa, Coin. Bipcoin is a new cryptocurrency that you can start mining today for free on ordinary computers. Unlike most altcoins, Bipcoin is not a clone of Bitcoin. Bipcoin is based on entirely new, more recent, and better code called CryptoNote. So unlike Bitcoin, Bipcoin has truly untraceable transactions, and we're working on adding distributed DNS functionality to Bipcoin. We're calling this .bip, and it will provide uncensorable domain names in an easy-to-use interface. Unlike previous systems attempting this, .bip will be simple for both a website owner and for people viewing websites. This will get at the worldwide adoption we need to keep speech free, and cyber squatting will not be a problem. Please help out with a donation or just share this with your friends if you can't chip in some cash or Bitcoin to save free speech around the world, because there are incoming regimes that hate honest criticism. Go to bipcoin.org. Once again, that's Bravo, India, Papa, coin.org. Michael Dean, Fiends, talking to Randy, England, and Brayden. What's your last name, Brayden?
Brayden.
You're just going by Brayden? Like,
yeah. Sure. Yeah. That's just
I like that. I know your real last name, but I won't ever say it. I posted a picture of you on Facebook, and you got irked. I like that. And a new cult member. I was just testing you to see if you'd put up with the cult. But no, really, it was kind of sort of an accident. But I will not do it again. And I also did, but I did check too to make sure there are no GPS tags in there.
Yeah.
Which most people don't do. So I'm looking out for your back already.
That's cool.
You gotta tell me later how to pronounce your name. I'm sending you buttons, so I don't. I wrote it down, but I can't say it. It's weird. So,
cool, man.
Yeah, cool, man. So, and you're gonna be on tomorrow night too, right?
Yeah, I want to hear more about this Bitcoin thing.
Although by tomorrow night, right. Perhaps he'll have his animal name.
Yeah, that'll take a while. We got to get to know him more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're gonna talk about
that.
The redemption in the third act here is gonna be. What we're actually doing with Bitcoin for decentralized DNS. So I'm going to give an elevator pitch, and I can do that and more in the 5 minutes we have left. I did a show tonight where it was like, you know, they kind of joke all the time. Like it's one of those like morning zoo crew Bitcoin shows. And it took me like an hour to get out my elevator pitch. So I'm going to give the elevator pitch real quick. And if, you know, it's my show, I can just mute you guys if you interrupt me. So DNS is the system by which websites are registered and resolved. So, you know, google.com is actually going to a bunch of numbers, and then computers find that site by the numbers. The numbers are not human rememberable. So there's web addresses like google.com or, you know, something.gov. Make America great.gov. So those are currently all of them for the whole world. Everywhere except North Korea, everywhere else, even Europe, everywhere, all of those, .com, .net, .bit, .euro, .eu, .co, .uk, all of those are controlled by ICANN, I-C-A-N-N, which sounds like, you know, a political slogan. Yes, ICANN, censor your website. So that's a U.S. federal government-controlled agency, controls that for the whole world. So they can seize your domain. And they do it without even due process. Like some bureaucrat just says, I don't like this, and sends a fax. Yes, they use faxes to ICANN and says, you know, make this domain. You've seen the sites. Like this domain has been seized by the Department of blah, blah, blah with these scary red letters and government logos. So that is done without any due process even. Like, you know, and they can take your life's work. They can censor your, you know, take down your business. They can censor your political opinions. And it could get worse, especially under a president who says, I will stop journalists from saying things I don't like. So there's this thing called Namecoin, which has been around for 5 years, which was an idea to do that kind of registration with .bit addresses, like Namecoin.bit, for instance. And do it over the Namecoin blockchain. Namecoin was the first altcoin. It was created for a purpose, not just a, hey, look at me too, coin, like most of them. And is created with the blessing and input from Satoshi, who created Bitcoin. He gave some ideas about it. And these programmers who are now the Namecoin dev team, development team, they coded it and made it, and it works, and it's a coin, and you can buy it and trade it, and you can actually, in a really clunky, hard to use way, register domains on it, and in a really bad, hard to use way, view domains on it. Also, all the domains are squatted because they made domain registration a set amount of Namecoin. So we're going to solve that problem. And also, that team doesn't like people like using their open source software for open source like projects without their permission, which is antithetical to everything about it. And they also didn't have any way to make money, so they've been cyber begging and trying to like partner with ICANN, which is like if Satoshi had partnered with the Federal Reserve. So we've solved all those problems. Go to bipcoin.org, download the 1.008 version of the white paper I just uploaded, and read it. And we got an Indiegogo campaign if you want to help out. Or just share it. We really want people to share it right now. Also, if someone wants to proofread for the final 6 typos that are probably in this 35-page document, you'll get on the golden floppy disk of redemption. So let me know if you're doing that at bipcoin@gmail.com. And Worms, man, thank you for your service, listeners. Thank you, Fiends, for your service. Brandon, Worms. You did great. You're a fiend now. You're still on probation. All of them are. Even Randy.
I gotta go see my probie officer.
Hey, yeah, good night, guys.
All right. Word.